It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. We have a wonderful panel for you. Dylan Tweeney joins us from Vala Mail. We've got our friend Wesley Faulkner from Austin, Texas, and futurist Amy Webb. We'll be talking, of course, about this very difficult week in tech, the response from Tim Cook and Satya Nadella, and why Wesley thinks Satya got it right. We'll talk about improving policing and the surprising choice just made by the Minneapolis City Council, social and organizational barriers to change, and phishing scams attempted to take down both the Trump and the Biden campaign. It's all coming up next on Twit. This Week in Tech comes to you from Twit's LastPass studios. Stay in control when it comes to your company's access points and authentication. LastPass makes enterprise-level security simple for your remote workforce. Check out LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twit, This Week in Tech, episode 774, recorded Sunday, June 7th, 2020. The Mafia is zooming. This episode of This Week in Tech is brought to you by Mint Mobile. They provide the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their three-month introductory plan. And get the plan shipped to your door free at mintmobile.com/twit. And by ExtraHop. ExtraHop helps you keep your business secure and available with SaaS-based cloud-native network detection and response. Get tips on securing and supporting remote access or check out the full product demo at extrahop.com/twit. And by Barracuda. Did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start with an email? To uncover the threats hiding in your Office 365 account, get a secure and free email threat scan at barracuda.com/twit. It's time for Twit, This Week in Tech, the show we cover the week's tech news. We have assembled a fine panel today, starting with one of my favorite people. Actually, all three of you. I love all three of you. I love Amy Webb, though. She's so great talking about the future from the Future Today Institute, amyweb.io. You're working on a new book, I know. I see the signals are talking behind you right there. And your most recent one about the... I always want to call them the bat fangs. I don't know why.
They could be
about the big
G mafia and the bat.
G mafia. Yeah, the big tech companies. Thanks for being here, Amy. Great to have you.
Thank you.
Also with us, Wesley Faulkner. It's great to see you, Wesley. Amy and I both hung with you in Austin at South by. And are you keeping a large marsupial in a cage behind you? What is
that? Is a bearded dragon named Pancake.
Pancake the bearded dragon.
Yes.
Lived by the sea. How big is your bearded dragon?
She's fairly large. I would say about that big.
Will she make an appearance, you think, or is she hiding?
Oh, no. I mean, I could pull her out if you want.
No.
I can do that later.
No, please. Yeah. I'm scared. Just keep her in the cage, please. What do bearded dragons eat?
Crickets.
Oh.
Worms, mealworms.
Oh, okay.
They actually eat vegetables and fruit too.
Okay.
We also feed them duvia roaches too.
Not King's
healthy.
Landing or anything like that. Not the entire ice wall. Nothing like that. Okay, good.
No. All right. No.
It's great to have you, Wesley. Thank you for being
Thanks
here.
Thanks for having me.
We also welcome, and it's been a while, I think, since we've seen Dylan Tweeney. Dylan, of course, VP Communications at Vala Mail, longtime tech journalist. It's good to see you.
How's it going, Leo?
Dylan, you're in the Bay Area, right?
I am, yeah, just south of San Francisco.
Okay.
In San Mateo.
Nearby. Wesley's in Austin, and Amy today is in Baltimore, although she has homes all over the country, apparently.
No, just New York and Baltimore.
Just New York and Baltimore. Hey, I would love to be able to say, I'm in my New York home this week. We, of course, come to you, as always, it seems, this year, in a difficult week. And Just, you know, it's hard. It's hard to know what to say. I think I really liked what Tim Cook wrote. Tim's been really pretty good about the crisis this nation's been going through, starting with the pandemic. Then, of course, the horrific death of George Floyd. And he most recently put a note and actually put it on Apple's webpage. The last thing we saw from him was in-house and it leaked out, but I thought it was beautifully written. This one is posted at apple.com/speakinguponracism. And I think, I don't know if you guys have read it, but I think it speaks from the heart and it speaks beautifully about the situation we're in today. It's a tough thing for a CEO because I think some people would say, you know, hey, Tim, you know, worry about your business. Don't worry about the nation. But I think Apple is a big company employing a lot of people, including many black people. And I think it's important for him to step up. He's always done that. It's really remarkable. I can't imagine Steve Jobs writing a note like this. Steve Jobs was glad to do open letters against Flash, but not against racism. As difficult as it may be to admit, this is a moment when many people may want nothing more than a return to normalcy or to a status quo that is only comfortable if we avert our gaze from injustice, he writes. As difficult as it may be to admit, that desire is itself a sign of privilege. George Floyd's death is shocking and tragic proof we must aim far higher than a normal future and build one that lives up to the highest ideals of equality and justice. With every breath we take, we must commit to being that change and to create a better, more just world for everyone. I asked you, Wesley, when we first started before the show began, how you're feeling, if you were at all hopeful or optimistic, and you said not really.
Yeah, yeah. And the letter's nice, and I think that points to it. I think the A-plus letter, though, goes for Satya Nadella from Microsoft. I think that one is the best because it's not put on the individual saying we must do better, saying like you do better. It's specifically Microsoft needs to do better and we will do better internally and then shine as an example externally. And I think that is more of a powerful statement than I've heard from anybody. Because if you feel that your organization, that racism is not a problem where you work, then I think you're like not really focused. And if you say I need to do better without actually putting forth efforts to change and be more concrete about what you're going to change as a company, that is another thing. And if you're saying I'm going to give $10 million to this organization, what you should do is just set aside that money in your budget and just saying we are going to go through some pain, we're going to go through some anguish, and we're going to have to restructure, and that's going to cost money. And so we're going to do that. I think some of it is like, well, we could hire from this place or that place, but you know they don't get up to speed soon enough or something like that. And so so put some more money in the training, put some more money into your internal efforts to make sure that if you don't see that racism's in your organization, find it by putting money in your organization to find it. Listen to complaints, let people speak, let people say what's wrong. And so having a listen session is great, but turning that around, just saying, okay, this is what we heard, these are the recommendations, and this is the plan for implementing them. That's kind of what you need to do if you're really interested in standing with people who are oppressed by the system.
There's...
I would argue there's one more thing to do, and that is to hire people of color and women. Mm-hmm. 5 years ago, I think in October or so, Google, Facebook, Apple, Microsoft all released their diversity reports. And, you know, they made promises that things would change. And basically, since the numbers were public and people started tracking, there's been less than a percentage point bump for Black and Latinx engineers and workers at a lot of these companies. So while I appreciate the letters that have gone out this week, there has been no substantive change whatsoever in 5 years at any of these companies and their hiring practices. So it's in addition to the fact that we know that there is bias and there are problems endemic within all of these organizations. But if you don't change the fabric, then it's really hard to change outcomes. And if you're not being the change that you want to see within your organization, I think it's a little challenging to read these letters and to assume that they are that they really do mean something beyond PR. I look at Microsoft's mm-hmm. letter. So I look at the letter from Tim and Satya, and I contrast that with what I saw out of Ben and Jerry's, which, to be fair, Ben and Jerry's mm-hmm. has a long history of taking stands. Ben and Jerry's is now owned by Unilever. What they wrote that had specific actions and ways to hold Ben and Jerry's accountable, you know, is a different ballgame. It's quite different. So
yeah. Yeah. And they made an ice cream.
And yeah, I mean, there's that.
That's commitment.
There's some real commitment. Mm-hmm. Actually, there's more than just hiring, though, because a number of companies have taken some hits because they talk. Well, Amazon's a good example where they stand in solidarity against police racism, but then they're selling face recognition technology to the police that is blatantly racist.
And well, that's. Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
I was
go
just
ahead.
Gonna say that, so that's because they're not listening to the people. Like the people who are focused on equity in that company do not have enough teeth, do not have enough power to actually affect change. So a lot of people say they value diversity of opinion and thought. But when it comes to, well, that's going to cost us a lot of money, like I said, that kind of wins out and prevents companies from taking that action. To say no to that money, say no to that contract, to divest in the places, even though it might be more lucrative as a whole for society, it could be very detrimental.
Yeah, and it's easy to use Amazon for this because they constantly pay lip service to the right thing while doing the wrong thing, it seems to me.
And then they fire people for, you know, trying to organize or make these things. So, you know, of course they don't have anybody who has a voice in their company because they forced them all out.
Right.
And it just took away the $2 hazard pay for their warehouse for employees.
But they made T-shirts. You know, they made T-shirts that said, thank you for risking your life to deliver tchotchkes to Americans. So that's there's that. Yeah, it's very.
I bet they have to turn those T-shirts in.
Afterwards, it's over. it's challenging because a lot. Well, I think it started with COVID-19 and then is accelerated by George Floyd's murder. There have been fractures in American society. Very deep fractures in income inequality and racism, you know, just kind of systemic bias and runaway capitalism for decades. And it's but it seems to have all come to a head. The pandemic started it. The racist murder really put a cap on it. And now Americans are taking to the street. And it feels like we're at an inflection point that we have a choice now.
Like-
we can go one way or the other.
It feels like we're at that moment in Civ or SimCity, and you're like, I made so many bad decisions. There's no way to untangle all of this stuff.
I
either
reset.
Like, it's time to find the cheat codes, or I just need to reboot.
Yep. I hope that's not the case because there is no reset button.
Well, the calls for defunding cops and police organizations is kind of like a reset. They're saying, like, let's just get rid of them and just start over.
Please explain that to me. Now, this isn't a technical subject, so we'll do it quickly. But don't we need some policing?
I think it's extremely confusing. I'll just say that. My take on it is that there should be, like, one department that says, I need someone here with a gun that can kill someone. If there's a police accident, you don't need to call that group.
Right.
You call another civil group.
Right.
If there's a report that needs to be made, you don't call the people with the guns that can kill people. There should be call it something else.
There's a lot of police work that can be done without life-threatening force.
Right. We call it police work now because the police is the default. Just make new organizations and new groups that can tackle those other things that don't require a person with a gun to kill person, that can kill someone.
Right.
And that's what's needed. Just make it up. And so you don't say call the police. You say call and then fill in the blank of whatever that's called.
That is kind of hitting the reset button because it's a whole different way of thinking about government interaction with problems, right? It's a different idea. But you're right. Lethal force is not a necessity in probably 99%, maybe 99.9% of what law enforcement does.
And you hear these cops who retire who have never discharged their weapons.
Right.
So it's even those who are trained don't necessarily need to use that. Because of that, I mean, if you look at police departments, look how they are trained, how they are indoctrinated. They are only really trained the most on the situations that is the rarest and the most.
Right. But those are life-threatening. You know, those are the dangerous situations, right? So
right.
you do want somebody who can handle those.
But do you want someone who's trained to fear for their life to act first there for all situations?
Right.
And I don't think so.
No. Yeah. I have a friend who's in code enforcement, but he carries a weapon. And I guess it's good that you can shoot a hoarder if you run into him, but probably doesn't need it most of the time. I don't know. I'll have to ask JT. All right. That's not a tech subject, but since you mentioned it, I was just curious because that is one of the calls to defund the police. But it's not necessarily eliminate all policing, but just to rethink what policing is and what it needs to be.
Yeah. And
that actually is a technical.
How is that technical?
I was going to say, you know, so I want to say a couple of things. And I'm also sort of I always am on the IRC channel when we do this. So I think it's important to point out all of the people on this show are not super, super left-leaning liberals. That is not me. So I am politically independent. If anything, I feel disenfranchised and like I don't have a party that represents what I believe. But this is important because, you know, I think that the problems that we're in today are because sometimes when we plan for the future, we get stuck with only the signals from that we have from the present. And so, you know, it's the year 2020. I wonder why our police departments don't have better technology. The weapons that they use are in a lot of ways, very primitive, you know, very
brute force.
Very. Yeah. You know, and I know that we have access to smarter, better technologies. I know that we have better access to smarter, better tools. They're just not being deployed.
Yeah.
You can't defund all of the police departments because there are negative next order consequences to that, just as there are negative next order consequences to the situation that we're in right now. It seems to me like if we're not going to reboot, then now is a really good time to stop and sort of think through what are all of the alternative futures. The challenge that we're in is that the conversations become really binary, and it could become technical. We could have far-ranging conversations about all types of alternative futures in which we are using and deploying technologies that are still respectful of privacy and, you know, people's human rights, while also deterring theft and crime and everything else as it's happening in a more reasonable way. But now is a good time to have that conversation. The challenge is that, as with every other industry, there's a ton of sort of embedded cultural norms and cherished beliefs that people are not willing to confront. If they were willing to confront their cherished beliefs, then we would not be on week two of protests. We would have seen some immediate actions. We would have seen changes versus, you know, promises.
Let me ask you, as a futurist, why is it so hard for us to think out of the box? We always, when we try to fix this stuff, do it in incremental ways that are clearly insufficient. Let's not use face recognition because that's racist. Why is it so hard for us to be innovative? Is it government moves too slowly? You've mm-hmm. obviously studied this.
Yeah, I mean, this is what I do. So there's a biological reason, and then there's a organizational reason. The biological reason is that our brains are wired against change.
Right.
It takes a tremendous amount of energy to recognize a new pattern, and there's a fear associated with that. Therefore, we do not confront uncertainty unless absolutely forced to, and once that happens, it's usually under duress. So the better thing to do is to be willing to always consider alternate futures that may or may not align with what you believe and what you're observing in the present. But that takes everybody being willing to do that. And by necessity, in the process of doing that, you are going to have to probably give up something in the short term if you want to affect change. So that's part of it. But the other part of it is structural and organizational. We have the guy that was that knelt on George Floyd's neck, you know, had been how many times disciplined?
19 disciplinary actions.
Right. So we have a organizational problem where change is not, you know.
Yeah, and but in the news, the reaction you get to that is, well, it's the problem is the union, the police unions. We got to do something about that, and that seems to me to be that kind of incremental change instead of rethinking like what you were just talking about, Wesley. The idea of maybe policing isn't the right answer for most of these situations. It's not merely getting, you know, changing the police union. So how can we raise kids that are more flexible in this way? Is it possible to teach people to be more flexible?
I think there's a technological solution to some of this, but you have a structural problem and you have a tactical problem. The tactical problem is solved with better technology than guns. But there's an emotional
attachment. Or rubber bullets, by the way, which aren't so non-lethal either.
I mean, there's like 1,000 different ways. There's 1,000 different alternative futures in which we're able to deter people in a meaningful way without substantively hurting them. We've just chosen not to do that. And if you pitch that idea to any law enforcement agency, it's going to be a no. For, you know, they'll come up with 1,000 different reasons, but it's always going to be no. And the truth is that there's always plausible, better ways of doing anything that you're doing at any time. The other issue is structural, and we, you know, that's a much longer, bigger conversation.
Yeah.
Dylan? They need a product release every so often, just like tech companies. It's just, this is how we're chasing the police this
government
this year.
Government 2.0.
Yeah,
3.0.
Yeah. Dylan, you were going to say something?
Yeah, I really like the idea that we need to have conversations that are more meaningful than just binary. But where do we have those conversations? Like, it sure isn't happening on Twitter and Facebook.
Well, let's talk about Twitter and Facebook, because that's also a big part of the news this week, particularly Facebook. We'll take a little break and we will get into that. And I apologize. I know a lot of people tune in to our shows on the network to escape from reality. But sometimes reality is so vicious, so present, so important that we can't really hide our heads. So there are times on this show when we're going to just have to talk about difficult things in life that are all around us. And I apologize if you've been looking for escape. There is no escape. Sorry. You're in it now. But fortunately, we have really great voices to help us through this, including Wesley Faulkner, who, by the way, besides being black, is looking for work at developer relations. If anybody, you know, a company like Microsoft wants to really stand up and say, yeah, okay, fine. Wesley's really good at what he does. And he's a good looking fella.
And if you're looking to assuage your guilt, then you can
go.
Hire me.
There you
and
go.
And then I will help.
There you go. Help. You know, I have to say, this was some years ago, I met the woman that Microsoft had hired for accessibility, and they had given her a very wide-ranging portfolio. She was able to go into every single department and say, you need to fix this for blind people, you need to fix this for, you need to help people. And that's the kind of thing you need to do. You need to say, this is so important, we're going to make systemic change in our company. And I think you're right, Wesley, when you said the best thing that Satya Nadella said is, this is something we're going to do, we have to do as a company. It's not on you. It's not on the world. We're going to fix this at Microsoft, and then everybody else should do it at their companies. I think that's a very good point of view. And just start by giving this guy
And last week, they had Accessibility Summit 2020.
Yeah.
And the same thing, like I was saying, they have a release cycle. This is what we're doing in our products to affect change and make it more accessible.
We need to see that every year for race relations, for sexism. I think that's something every company could stand up for. What have we done this year? That's really good. And what are we going to do in 2021? Dylan Tweeney is also here. Valomail is a great solution for a broken system called email to actually say that the mail came from who you said it's coming from. I love that. It's great to have you, Dylan. And, of course, Amy Webb, our futurist. AmyWebb.io, the Future Today Institute. We'll talk about Facebook when we come back. There's a lot to say. And I'm really, this is another, talk about intractable problems. This is another one. Our show today brought to you by Mint Mobile. I love my Mint Mobile phone. They sent me a iPhone SE and I put the Mint Mobile SIM in it. And it's a perfect combination. My iPhone 10 had been broken. And when I got it back, I said, this thing weighs 80 pounds. I'm going back to, and it costs $100 a month. I'm going back to Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile will cut your cell phone bill significantly by a huge amount with the same great service at a fraction of the cost. I got my first cell phone with one of the big wireless providers back when I was, you know, I don't know, maybe 20 years ago. Those high monthly bills, though, $180 a month, and they keep going up, by the way, $90 a month, $100 a month. Mint Mobile has cut my wireless bill down. Well, I have a plan that gives me, it's for $25 a month. You can go as low as $15 a month, save like hundreds of dollars every year. And they do it without sacrificing service. They're using T-Mobile. They're an MVNO, so you get the same great service, unlimited text, nationwide calling, and then you buy the amount of data you're going to need. The $15 plan is their three-month introductory plan. You should absolutely start with that. Unlimited nationwide talk and text, crazy fast 4G LTE. I started with that. I liked it so much. I went for the $25 plan, 12 gigabytes of data a month. I never use it up. And that's literally less than a third what I was paying for my T-Mobile service. You can bring your own phone, port your number over if you want, along with all your existing contacts. They have phones too. In fact, they have a great deal on the iPhone SE. Premium wireless, $15 a month. And of course, if you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money back guarantee. You'll be cutting your wireless bill to $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan. It's such a great deal. Have them send you the SIM. There's no charge. $15 a month, 3-month introductory plan. You get 3 gigabytes a month of data. Mintmobile.com/twit. I liked it so much, I went for the $25 a month. I paid $300 for a year. I just love it. I haven't had a bill from them. I won't get a bill from them till next year. I love it. Mintmobile.com/twit. You got to love the Fox. And don't you love Ryan Reynolds' ads for Mint Mobile on TV if you've seen them? They're hysterical. Mintmobile.com/twit. We thank them for their support of This Week in Tech. Facebook. I tell you what, we talk about this a lot. It's kind of coming to a head. Twitter decided that enough is enough. They labeled a couple of the president's tweets as misleading, and then they labeled another tweet as glorifying violence. The tweet about when the looting starts, the shooting starts, yick. Mark Zuckerberg decided, nope, not going to do it. And boy, did that cause a lot of problems. Facebook employees staged a virtual walkout, although I don't know, a virtual, I mean, what about a real walkout? Virtual walkout. They did lose some employees, but for last Monday, hundreds of Facebook employees refused to work. So we're not going to do it. And it did get Mark Zuckerberg's attention. He did say, okay, we're going to do something about this. For a long time, he's defended free speech on the platform. I have to say, I was very intrigued by Ben Thompson's post on Stratechery because he said, I believe Facebook is doing the right thing by leaving Trump's posts up, and Twitter is doing the wrong thing by attaching fact-checked labels or obscuring them behind a warning label, both of which Twitter has done. He says interfering with the public utterances of the president is bad for the tech industry broadly, bad for social networks specifically. But that does not resonate with me. But the second point kind of does. Deciding what should or should not be fact checked is a logistical nightmare, and I would say also philosophically very challenging. He quoted Jack Dorsey's tweet, "This does not make us an arbiter of truth. Our intention is to connect the dots of conflicting statements and show the information in a dispute so people can judge for themselves." He does not buy that. He says that's the problem in general, as you put these companies in the position of being arbiters of truth. So I'm going to guess that nobody on this panel likes the idea that Facebook should just do, you know, best speech is more speech, just not block anything. But Ben does say, I believe in the more speech approach. And Ben's pretty smart.
I feel like there's he's kind of confusing a couple of things here. By calling it a free speech issue, he's making it sound like Facebook is making a decision about whether what content gets to stand and what content doesn't get to stand. And he even admits, you know, or says that it's not just, you know, it's they're not removing the Facebook or Twitter didn't remove the tweet. They just put a, you know, a warning on top of it. And, you know, when the New York Times covers the president's tweet, they, you know, they reproduce the entire tweet, which seems entirely comparable. I mean, you can write about something or you can attach a statement saying this is inflammatory and, you know, the doesn't accord with the facts or this doesn't fit our terms of service, but we're not removing it because it's the president of the United States saying it. Like, just adding a warning flag like that does not seem to me to be in any way a suppression of speech. It's just Facebook or Twitter, which actually did it, saying, you know, this is our platform and we have a responsibility to, you know, to our audience and to the people of the world to present information responsibly. And when it comes from a figure like the president, it's, you know, it's not like opening the floodgates to fact-checking every single post on the platform. It's like saying this is actually a significant concern and we're in a position to do something about it.
Does it matter that they didn't do it to other tweets that were equally incorrect? Or, in fact, I think you maybe could make an argument the president wasn't completely wrong about mail-in ballots having some authentication issues. That is a problem.
Twitter was just sloppy. Here's the thing.
But that's the problem. If they're sloppy, they shouldn't be doing it if they can't do it well.
Yeah.
So well, that's like saying the New York Times shouldn't publish. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, maybe they shouldn't.
Right. I mean, to open another can of worms. I'll stop now.
Okay, go ahead, Amy.
Well, Zuckerberg, so Facebook's official line now for years has been that it is a platform not making editorial judgments. Journalism schools and newsrooms across the country for the past decade have been arguing and debating whether or not Facebook should, as a platform, have some type of editorial function or whether or not they already serve an editorial function. And the thing is that Facebook is making editorial decisions all the time, and it has been doing this for years. It's algorithmic. They can argue all they want that they are just a platform, but a weighted algorithm makes determinations. Otherwise, you would have so much content that is either nonsensical or not interesting to you in your feed, you just wouldn't be using Facebook.
But you control. But you could control that in both Facebook and Twitter.
You cannot.
You choose
Facebook
who to follow.
Suppresses. No. Facebook. If you look at this from a not human but rather algorithmic sort of point of view, Twitter has done no editorial content direction whatsoever until very, very recently.
Yeah, they just started practically, yeah.
Right, but Facebook has been doing it all along. Facebook absolutely suppresses content. If they were not suppressing content, you would literally see every single thing that every single person that you're connected to posts, and don't.
They're making editorial choices algorithmically in the news feed, is what you're saying.
So again, I dropped out of law school before, like right before I started, so I do not have a degree that qualifies me to say this, but if I was a person arguing this, I would try to make the case. I would make the case that Facebook has been suppressing speech for years.
Right.
They are algorithmically suppressing it. They are algorithmically making determinations about who sees what, and therefore they are absolutely an editorial operation. It's just not in the way that we think of a news organization. because so much more is done without a human in the loop. But I mean, it's nonsense to say that they're not doing that. And as such, they should. I am not suggesting that we clamp down on speech. Free speech is really important. But we have to force the tech platforms and the companies to have a conversation where we're all, you know, talking about the same thing. We are talking about apples to apples, not apples to, you know, baseball bats or something else. It makes no sense.
That point about the algorithm is really true. And it's clear that the algorithm favors certain kind of speech. So speech that tends to be emotionally engaging or inflammatory or, you know, which provokes strong emotional reactions will get shared more and then therefore amplified. And I think that the Facebook platform for sure is designed to amplify those kinds of strong emotional reactions and a kind of strong emotional content, because that's what keeps people engaged. And that's an editorial decision. I think you're right about that, Amy.
I would pile on this too, to Amy's point, is that if these messages from the president contained a nipple, it definitely would have been censored in some way. And if it had pornography, it would have been taken down. And both are free speech. And so if they're for free speech, but they take that stuff down, then it sounds like that is a choice that they are making. And it's a choice that they're choosing not to make with the same content.
This is the problem. They've put themselves in the position of a publisher, and then they say, well, we don't want to be a publisher. But there's value. I mean, we wouldn't have seen... Here's the argument Jeff Jarvis gives. I'll repeat it. We wouldn't have seen the horrific footage of George Floyd's murder except that it was posted on Facebook and it went viral there. Right? There's value to what Facebook prints.
With great power comes great responsibility. And that's for both Zuckerberg and Facebook, but also for the president of the United States.
Yeah, well, so we can't control him, obviously.
Yes, you can.
At the ballot
box. You can control what he posts on Facebook if you're Mark Zuckerberg.
But actually, you can't because...
What's going to happen? It's a private institution, so yeah. They can.
No, they can. But he's got the bully pulpit. I mean, whatever he wants to say, he's going to be able to say. And it's going to get printed in newspapers, and it's going to be put on TV. Doesn't matter if he does it on Facebook or Twitter or somewhere else, right?
I think that just proves the point that how Facebook can do it because they're not taking
they're
away,
not really taking
his,
away
ability
his,
yeah,
yeah. His ability to talk. By the way, even though I read out loud Ben's post, and I think Ben's a smart guy, I don't know what the answer is to this. This seems to be a very difficult, intractable problem. And I'm not on Facebook for the reason that I just don't like to see the stuff that goes through that feed. It was bringing me down, man. I rejoined Facebook during the pandemic because I thought, oh, it'd be good to be able to stay in touch with people. This is a useful tool for that. And we're calling Amy back, I think, is what we're going to do here. And then it got me so depressed, I immediately killed it. Now, I haven't killed my Twitter feed, but I have to be very judicious about reading it.
I'm with you, Leo. I find that Facebook is not good for my mental health.
No.
I spend too much time on it. I really use it very judiciously.
But we have to recognize a huge percentage of Americans get their news, not all of it, but get a lot of it from Facebook.
Well, and I don't remember who posted this, but the top 10 stories on Facebook in the news feed in the last week or so were all like Fox News and really, really, really conservative outlets. So it seems clear which way the algorithm skews.
Yeah. He seems to have been somewhat influenced. You never know with Mark, but somewhat influenced by the walkout and the protests from his engineers. On Friday, he said, we're going to review our Facebook policies on posts that promote or threaten state use of force or voter suppression techniques. They're going to look into options for flagging or labeling posts that are a violation but shouldn't necessarily be removed entirely. This is Mark's post on Friday on Facebook. And he also said, we're going to study Facebook's review structure to make sure the right groups and voices are at the table. Wesley, does that feel like lip service, or do you think he's genuinely planning to do something about it?
I'm going to say this, and this is just from friends who work at Facebook that I know, that Mark is as genuine as he thinks he is. I'm not sure what that means. That means, like, we're hearing a lot of people, like, the walkout and people talking about how they disagree because he doesn't stifle his employees from saying that.
Yeah.
So that's a really good thing.
Yes.
And so when he says that he's going to try to do this,
it's credible.
I think he's trying in his own words. But that being said, it's like when you're trying to work out a solution to a problem, but you're only thinking about it in your head without consulting other people, is that I feel that he rules that way. So he makes things and makes judgments that make sense to him, but he's using his own thought process. And if he comes to what he thinks is a solution, that's the right solution. And I don't think he allows other people to go with a solution that he would disagree with.
Right.
And maybe nine times out of 10, he's right. But that means 1 in 10 is someone else has a better solution that doesn't get enacted.
And of course, he controls Facebook.
Maybe a situation.
He controls Facebook with an iron grip. He has 60% voting, percent of the voting shares. No one can say no to him. And that's a very Silicon Valley approach, isn't it? I'm going to think my way. Every coder knows this approach. I'm going to think my way to the correct solution, and that'll be that. It's a logic problem. I'm not surprised
here's the issue.
He thinks that way.
Here's the baseline of the issue. And whatever he decides, if it's negative, he himself and probably the people around him will not be negatively affected. So if it's voter suppression or whatever, none of that really affects him.
Right.
Probably won't affect his family, won't affect his friends.
It's the ultimate privilege.
Yes. And so these decisions, I don't feel that he understands the weightiness of it and the impact of it from an actual well-rounded perspective. And that's not a knock on him. That's not a knock on his understanding. It's just that it's a fact.
Right.
He will not feel the impact of this. I mean, he's been rich for how long? Ever in his life. In his whole adult life, he's been rich.
Right.
The people around him have been shielded by saying, hey, my friend, my cousin, my buddy is Mark Zuckerberg. And then they get some of that privilege too.
Right.
If he was genuinely friends and generally connected to people who he respected that have a totally different perspective and way of looking at the world, I think he would have a little bit more influence from that direction. But sometimes I feel that if he says, I won't do this, but instead I'm going to hand this over because it's that important, which I don't think he has the willingness to do. He doesn't have the willingness to say, I'm letting this go. I'm greenlighting every single last thing you're doing. And that won't happen. That's the only thing that gives me pause. And so, but I think he thinks he's genuine. Go, Dylan.
Yeah, I will just add that as a communicator, when I see lines like we will review the policies and procedures or there will be a review, that feels like lip service to me. That feels like something that somebody in the communications department put together.
Yeah,
There's nothing concrete, no specifics, no like we're going to hire.
That's like Congress announcing we're going to form a committee.
Right.
It does sound like lip service. Like I said, I have a little bit of bias from my friends who do work there. And it is, like I said, he's trying to be genuine about the change.
Yeah.
But like I said, I don't think he is going to keep himself in the decision matrix. And even if he puts the committee together and has really good recommendations, those recommendations will be put against his thought process. And then if there is a tie, he wins. So the barrier of those changes, they have to be so much better than what he wants or thinks of for them to actually come to fruition.
So let's talk about the problem as he sees it. Can we at least set the parameters of the problem? The problem is philosophically, I think, he and many of us think speech is a good thing and more speech is a better thing. And even if you find speech horrific and reprehensible, the free flow of speech is the only viable solution. On the other hand, Facebook has and will, I'm sure, continue to bar terrorist groups, a variety of kinds of speech. You know, free speech doesn't mean anything goes. So there are, he must have some rules for what kind of speech goes and what kind of speech doesn't go. And then, of course, I don't know if he considers this. He certainly made enough money, doesn't need to. But he has a responsibility to the stakeholders in Facebook to do something that is good for them financially as well. Are there any other parameters that he's juggling?
He should be juggling impact, and that seems like
society, the impact on society.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to put that in the factor because he feels that, okay, let's say someone gets radicalized on Facebook and then kills someone. I think the onus is on that person that he would put it on. That person chose to kill someone.
But Facebook does block stuff that would radicalize people, right? I mean,
that's because the law makes them. So the penalty on them is great.
Got it.
So the law does not.
He doesn't care about consequences others.
Exactly. Yes. Well, unless it's a consequence to Facebook.
Got it.
And Facebook has been used not just to radicalize individuals, but whole societies. You know,
well,
what I mean?
You could point to Duterte in the Philippines, who used Facebook to get elected to support his fascist regime. That's not the first time Facebook's been used as a platform to do that kind of thing.
And
Myanmar, exactly. It doesn't seem like they've done much to stop that.
No. In fact, I think that, I mean, you know, they'll admit after the fact that they recognize that they were used that way and they're sorry, but you don't.
Facebook is good at apologizing.
They don't take proactive. Yeah. Yeah.
They don't want to be seen as being picking winners and losers.
I understand that. That's that best kind of speech is more speech thing.
Basically, if Hitler was in charge of Germany today, Hitler would be able to use Facebook to say whatever Hitler wants. And what you should do is says, you know, I do have an opinion. This is important.
Right.
And make the right choice. And I think that's you're seeing the same thing at New York Times that was brought up today. And I don't know if you saw right before we hit the air, James Bennett resigned.
He did.
Yes.
Holy cow. So let's recap that story, because that's a fascinating story. The New York Times editorial board, their op-ed section, is different from the news section. It's separate from the news section. And they were attempting to show both sides, I guess. So they ran an editorial by an Arkansas Senator, Tom Cotton, that said, no, we got to use military force against the protesters because Antifa, basically. There were factual mistakes in the editorial. There was a lot of criticism that they ran that editorial. And Bennett took some of the heat and then said, well, I didn't read it before we published it.
Well, what editor hasn't published an inflammatory op-ed without reading it? I mean, really, let's be fair.
That's a bizarre defense. That's a bizarre defense. And now he's out. He resigned, but I imagine he resigned under intense pressure from the Salzburgers and the rest of the Times organization, because it was a real black mark on the New York Times.
The Times over the past, I don't know, 3 years has made some significantly different changes in how it runs its opinion section. And obviously, you know, I think that there's been a rush to capitalize on clicks. In the digital economy, attention is currency. And if you've got salacious columns, you know, there is a desire to get them out.
Good for business. Good for business.
I will say, by the time that piece was posted, that argument was already two, three days old. I think that like a lot of organizations right now, the Times has made some poor choices in what it's publishing and for what reasons. They've also had a really good year in terms of attention and clicks and money.
Yeah.
And, you know, can I just quickly say some things? I think it's important.
Yes, we can go back because you were silenced for a huge chunk of that. So anything from the past 10 minutes you want to talk about is fair.
Yeah, I just wanted to highlight, I think it is wrong that when we that at the moment, as we're talking about the future of content and who's saying what, where, whether it's a newspaper, whether it's the editorial page of a newspaper or Twitter, and therefore we're talking about Jack, or Facebook, and therefore we're talking about Mark, YouTube always gets left out of this conversation. And, you know, there's the initial launch of the inflammatory content that gets put out in some way. The important thing that happens, though, because this is an ecosystem, is all of the downstream content that then gets produced. And all of that is happening elsewhere. Like, a lot of that's happening on YouTube. And if you look at everybody's personalization algorithms, you know, Facebook has done a pretty good job of capturing attention, but they are nowhere close to being as powerful and as strong as YouTube.
Yeah. And the same exact criticism of the YouTube algorithm. It's a recommendation engine that promotes engagement and stickiness by becoming extreme, essentially.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So I just, I'm kind of like less interested in what Zuckerberg has to say and far more interested in what we're going to do about YouTube.
Okay. Fair point. Yeah. I think they're two sides of the same problem, obviously. The nice thing about Facebook is you can point to one person, Zuckerberg, because he controls it. I don't know who, you can't point to Susan Wojcicki, CEO of YouTube, but maybe you can. You can't really point to Sundar Pichai.
A little bit in her direction.
Bit.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
There's no obvious poster boy for YouTube's failures like there is for Facebook's failures. So maybe that's why.
No, but I mean, but YouTube, you know, YouTube, it is because of YouTube that we have a world. YouTube is sort of like the kindling.
Right.
You know, Facebook may be the giant logs that everybody sort of sees, but there is no fire without that foundation. And I think a lot of the foundation is the interplay between the stuff people hear about on Twitter and Facebook and then, you know, get sucked into because the algos are so good. They are so good on YouTube that even if you are logged in with a singular account, you've got multiple people watching, it still knows the difference, you know, yeah, as it starts delivering you down, you know, content to go down the rabbit hole.
And there's something different about YouTube, too, because you can just sit back and have it autoplay.
That's right. It's
so you
passive.
You could start out watching videos about Magic the Gathering, and like 2 hours later, while you're vegging out on the couch, it's like jihadist training videos or something. And like it has been demonstrated to create, to radicalize people because of that.
That's right. And it doesn't need, it is a truly passive network. So simply by continuing to watch and have, YouTube is a part of Google. So there's just a tremendous pipeline of data that are there to guide and understand what the system is doing. I think in so many ways just a different just like significantly different than Facebook. So I totally agree that something more substantive should at least be discussed, if not done.
What?
But YouTube always gets left out of this conversation.
No, and that by all means belongs in it. So let's include it. In fact, YouTube's much more important than Twitter. And you're right. You can make the argument it's much more important than Facebook. But let's talk about Facebook and YouTube because these are clearly the worst and most influential. What seems to me very difficult is what to do. So I'd love to hear from all of you, all three of you. Why don't you start, Amy? What should YouTube do?
To deal with which one of these problems?
How do you fix it? Well, how do you fix it? Do you just turn off the recommendation engine?
The brain responds more to threat than opportunity, and our limbic system loves YouTube. So the challenge has always been the business model. The business model requires our attention, even the paid version. And part of what is incentivizing the algos to get as good as they've gotten is to have us sit and watch for hours. I mean,
why is it so hard for us in this country to say a company should make less money? Why is it so hard for us to say Facebook, turn off the algorithmic feed on the news feed. YouTube, turn off recommendation engine. Yes, you'll make less money. You'll still do fine. Why is it hard for us to, can't we just say, turn off the recommendation engine?
Leo, we are in a free market economy. These are publicly traded companies.
You can't.
And
you just can't.
You can't. The other thing I would say is, you know, let's not forget that about 18 months ago, there was a tremendous amount of talk that looked finally pretty serious about antitrust. And all of these companies, Google, Apple, Amazon, they were all facing some form of antitrust enforcement from attorneys general to, you know, the various different federal departments. And COVID has really played into the hands of the tech companies in this case. And I would say even going through what not just the United States is going through, but there are protests everywhere because this affects everybody.
I love it. All over the world. It's amazing. Yeah.
Leo, you and I have both spent time in Japan. Japan is not a place where there are a lot of protests.
No.
And
when we were in Tokyo, our guide apologized to us because there was a protest and she was visibly embarrassed. She was mortified that that protest was going on. I'm so sorry you should see that.
Right. So the fact that there are tens of thousands of people in Japan protesting tells you something. Now, here's the issue. As the, you know, everybody is under intense pressure to get the economy reopened and to continue to do something about this pandemic. Any calls to have these companies make less money, any calls to reignite that antitrust enforcement is going to find itself, anybody who's trying to do this is going to find themselves under pressure not to undertake any actions that would cause the further loss of jobs. So I am always of the, I always think that the way forward has to be an economic way forward. And maybe that's just my academic background is economics, so maybe that's part of where this comes from.
So you have to make it so that it costs them money to do this badly?
We either have to do it so that it costs them money, but punitive measures usually wind up in court.
Right.
And when things wind up in court, they drag on and
Well, we've seen, we saw what happened with Microsoft DOJ. It took so long. By the time they finished, the issue was moot.
That's right. So I don't think that punitive economic measures work. I think that coming up with economic incentives, which sounds, crazy, because what I'm suggesting is that we figure out a better way for them to win. But I think that given the situation that we're in, that's the most probable way forward. We have to figure out a way for Zuckerberg, for Dorsey, for everybody at YouTube. We have to figure out a way for them to be a hero to what's best for the public,
right,
what's in the public interest, while also being a hero to their shareholders. That is a tricky thing to do. And you have to be absolutely willing to make short-term sacrifices so that you can be a hero to both and treat the villain as these systematic problems that we're all dealing with. But if you choose to only be a hero to your shareholders, then we wind up in the problem that we're in. If you kind of half-ass it, then the problem still gets worse. So this requires a totally different way of thinking and I think courageous leadership under extraordinary circumstances. But until somebody is willing, so fine, Jack, if you're listening, after you've meditated and had your liquid crazy drinks all day long, this is your call to action. Like, figure out a way to be a hero to your shareholders while you are creating a Twitter that serves the actual public interest. It just requires creativity. Zuck, if you're listening to this, this is your call to arms. Do the same thing. But you people who made our future, who we all look up to, also have cherished beliefs that you must confront. And if you are not willing to confront your cherished beliefs, then we don't move anywhere forward. Then we continue to spiral downward. And I just think that for the people that built the future, what a horrible legacy to leave behind. You have an opportunity now to take these platforms and to do something great, to lead us into a better place. But you have to choose to do that through creativity and new kinds of risk taking, and being willing to make short-term sacrifices for the purpose of the long-term.
Wesley, what do you think? What would you do if you could make wave a magic wand?
I think it's incredibly restrictive to think that there's one answer. For instance, when I hear about self-driving cars, they talk about the trolley car problem.
Yeah.
Do you kill one person or five people?
Right.
Something I haven't heard yet is, what if you turn on the car for the first time saying, hey, do you want to kill the one person or five people? And then have the person who drives chooses. The same with the Facebook and algorithms. Make it so you do all of them. Do every single algorithm. And then when you come into Facebook, it says, hey, do you want to see racist? Do you want to see misinformation from a politician? Do you want to see like all this stuff or yes or no? And have people do a questionnaire and know what they're going to get.
Well, doesn't the algorithm do that? Doesn't the algorithm automatically assess their interest?
It chooses for you.
But yeah, based on what you look at.
And now you can't complain. Now you can't say, we want President Trump, Trump's post taken down.
Right.
If you can choose, I want the Facebook that gets away from people who are bad.
I'm going to guess we're all not following Trump on Twitter.
Possibly, but like make it so like dictators, politicians, whatever, choose
broader strokes. Yeah.
Let people put in the marketplace, build your own algorithm.
Which Facebook do you want? Like, do you want the racist Facebook?
I like, you know who is a great human being? Tom Hanks. I want the Tom Hanks
Facebook.
On Facebook.
Yeah.
And then I will do that. And then just let people, can choose what kind of world you want to live in, what kind of algorithm that you want to support, and then figure out what marketers, what companies, where they're putting their ads. And you're like, hey, I heard you're putting on the one that explicitly says this is a racist Facebook. That's a problem. You have a choice. And they're choosing to do that.
That's interesting.
That would be my magic wand.
I like just it. Well, that's the second part of Amy's thought, which is be creative and come up with a solution that serves the stakeholders, that makes you more money, but also serves society. I think that's an interesting solution. How about you, Dylan? You got a good creative thing to send Mark Zuckerberg's way?
Yeah. Let me just build on both of those suggestions about creativity and choose your own algorithm. I think it'd be useful if there was more algorithmic transparency.
Yes.
So
Facebook's never said how it works.
No, that's right.
Nor has Google. Nor has YouTube.
So you could do this on a really granular level, like on Pandora. Does anybody still use Pandora? Probably not, but I do. But it tells you, like, were you recommended this song because it's got heavy bass line and a female vocalist and, like, whatever. And you can see that. What if they did that with YouTube videos and with the things they're recommending in your Facebook feed or with tweets? Like, there was a little option to say, like, hey, why are you recommending this to me? Well, we're recommending it to you because it matches up with the other racist stuff that you like, or because, you know, it has to do with, like, I don't know, Zen or something, and you've shown an interest in Zen. But so here's the thing is, I think you have to not only expose that to users, but you need to make it programmatically accessible so that somebody, you know, a grad student in computer science or a journalist could go through and pull data out of the system. And, you know, obviously they're going to have some concerns about not, you know, making it possible to reverse engineer their magic algorithms, but pull enough data out that you can start to say, like, hey, we've noticed like there's a population of people over here to whom Facebook is consistently pushing, you know, Breitbart and Fox News and, you know, whatever else, Alex Jones or whatever. And there's a population on YouTube over here that's consistently getting like, you know, videos about furries or something.
I love it. You could have a third party ecosystem.
Yeah. And then that would
tools that would help you customize to your liking, your Facebook feed or your YouTube feed.
And it would provide accountability because then these people doing this kind of research could publish their research and they could say, like, look, we've noticed the algorithm works in this way, or hey, we've noticed like a potential problem over here. And then the companies have to respond to that.
I love that. Amy, is that the kind of out of the box creativity you're talking about?
I think we need to go right up to the edge of what's plausible. So I would like to say yes, and what else can we do? I mean, I think everybody's been sitting around waiting for a business case for self-sovereign identity forever. So I think we have a plausible business case.
It also has to work globally because it's not just an American problem.
That's right.
These are American companies, but this is a global problem now.
That's right. And so this is the other sort of thorny piece of this, which is that if I was a developer, the question that I'm sure I would be asking myself is, what's the taxonomy that's getting used? What's the machine learning model? How do I sort out, you know, different cultures, different people use words differently. And in some cases, they're acceptable. In other cases, they mean, you know, horrible things. Sarcasm within communities doesn't always play well online. So the question becomes, this is not about like thought police or anything else. It's a technical question, which I don't have an answer to. And that is, how do you build that taxonomy? How do you build the machine learning model? And then how do you deploy it to account for the unknowable number of unique ways in which everybody uses language, right? And I suspect that when Facebook says publicly, we haven't been able to do X, that some of what they're talking about is this. So again, isn't there another very creative way to approach the problem? And I think, again, because these are companies in a free market economy that are publicly traded, that require, you know, that they have fiduciary responsibilities, that we have to figure out a way to incent them to build things that are potentially going to be loss leaders, and to give them some ability to build out risk. So again, like, here's another way to think about this. You know, we've got OAuth as a single sign-in. Is there some OAuth something that would cut across all of our different communications channels that would at least verify? This is where I come back to self-sovereign identity. And like, is there a way to at least verify that the person is a real person versus, you know, a bot just meant to stir up trouble? So like, that would be one layer. And maybe the next layer is, well, if it's a real person, then, you know, because you wind up with problems. Like, if you're posting photos of people on Facebook, photos of people at the Louvre or something where they're standing in front of modern art that happens to show a nipple. How do you train a machine learning model to recognize that that nipple is okay, but a more salacious pose from a person who's or whatever, revenge porn is bad. This is where it gets challenging. It's not something that we can't address, but the market doesn't reward that type of work. And my point is, we have to figure out a way to reward, financially or otherwise, somebody doing the research within these organizations and producing some kind of result that's actionable, right? Because otherwise, we're just spinning our wheels.
I do have to say that this, what's going on and what's gone on over the last 2 weeks is society's way of saying, you got to make a change. That's one way to accomplish this. It is, if you want an economic consequence, if people are marching in the street saying Facebook has to change, or the world has to change, or society has to change, that's a very strong signal coming to you that maybe you should be thinking about making a change. And I think that's one of the reasons you're seeing people like Tim Cook and Satya Nadella post big public apologies and statements about what's going to happen. So, in a way, that's what's happening right now, is people are saying, they're standing up, they're taking to the streets saying, no more, this must end. Isn't this the most healthy way for that to happen?
I think that it's worth remembering that the obligation to maximize profit to maximize shareholder return is not the only obligation that a publicly traded corporation has. That's a belief that or a mentality about thinking about public corporations that has become increasingly dominant over the last three decades, but did not used to be the case. So this argument that all they have to be concerned about as a corporation is maximizing profit, I think, is short-sighted. The pendulum could go the other way.
What is their obligation as a publicly held company? It's not merely to prop up your stock price, right? But what is it?
Well, that is the way they are managed.
That's their grade.
Today.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's their grade. But,
and
you know,
ultimately, you affect their grade. You can affect
people.
Their
they have
grade.
An obligation not to pollute the environment. They have an obligation to.
And if people stand up and say,
laws.
We're not going to buy your product, we're not going to participate in your site because we don't like the way you treat people, that affects your grade, doesn't it, in the long run? That's why I'm saying the one way people can do this is by standing up.
Yes, it should.
Or kneeling.
So, again, there's the regulatory. There's the regulatory constraint. There's the business ecosystem constraint. And then there's the tacit relationship between professor of business school. In business school, we talk about creating a value network. So this is the all the services and the products and everything related to an organization. And, you know, as they gain value, the values created for customers, the value is created back to the organization, but it requires an omnidirectional relationship. Here, the issue is that we have reached a sort of fever pitch right now, but I live in the city where Freddie Gray was murdered. And I remember 5 years ago, everybody talking about, you know, getting off of Facebook's a big part of the problem. You know, a lot of these same conversations we're hearing today, and like nobody left Facebook.
Right.
You know, everybody seems to hate the fact that Trump has this Twitter megaphone that is, you know, at the beginning was like entertaining and is now starting to fundamentally shift geoeconomics and the geopolitical world order. And it's not like their DAUs or MAUs are going down that right. I know of.
No,
right?
They're going up, if anything, I'm sure.
So, again,
just like cable news network loves Donald Trump.
So these are publicly traded companies, and for better or worse, you know, they may be graded by the market, but they have a, you know, if they don't continue to grow, then they don't continue to you know, do what it is that they're doing. And as long as they don't run afoul of actual statute or regulation, then most often they are going to do the thing that enables them to grow.
Is public action better than legislation and regulation?
I think it depends on the situation.
If people just get fed up and say, that's it, I quit in enough numbers.
But Leo, we're talking about communication systems that are that I think in some ways understand us better than we understand ourselves. Right. So
nobody's quitting Facebook. I mean, people are, but not enough, obviously.
No. So Wesley and Dylan had suggested, which is a skinned version of Facebook where I want the Tom Hanks version of Facebook versus the existing one. You know, what would it take for that to be true? It would take some form of self-realization. We would have to confront the people that we are, you know, and the way that it exists right now, we enjoy getting our limbic systems kind of like getting fired up. We get little hits of dopamine. So we have to figure out because Facebook doesn't have to exist. You know, like Microsoft has to exist. The lights in my home don't work without Microsoft. But Facebook, if it went away tomorrow, yeah, I think people would be annoyed. But Facebook isn't required to make the world run. There is nothing forcing us to use it. There is nothing forcing news organizations who have been repeatedly screwed over. You know, so as much as newsrooms complain about Facebook, what then? Let's all stop. Like, what about a Facebook blackout week? What if everybody was like, we're done. So, you know, instead of just posting a black square on Instagram, let's actually leave the platform. Even the creators who rely on that, like, then you get their attention.
Yeah.
But, you know.
It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
You may say they're not as important as the power and the lights, but I think there are probably a lot of people who feel like Facebook is just as vital to their well-being. They may be mistaken, but I think they feel that way. I know every time I say leave Facebook, they go, I can't do that. I can't do that. Maybe they're just addicted. Let's take a little break. Wesley Faulkner's here. It's great to have you from Austin, Texas, the king of developer relations. You would be so lucky to have this guy on your team. Such a great guy. He'd even bring his, what is it, a paper dragon, a Komodo dragon?
Bearded dragon.
Bearded dragon in with him from time to time. You could all see the giant animal? Is it your kids, bearded dragon?
It's the family.
Yeah.
Bearded dragon. Sadly, our bearded dragon died.
Oh no.
3 days ago. So,
oh my God.
Pancake is as of two days ago.
He's a replacement bearded dragon.
Yeah. Yeah. She was, she's a rescue. Her previous owners didn't want her.
Oh, geez. And so, how long do bearded dragons live?
Gosh, a long time. I don't know. 20 years, 30 years,
hundreds of years. So you're going to be handing this down to your great grandchildren. No, I'm making that.
Wow. Yeah.
What was the previous?
Maybe shellacked, but no.
What was the previous bearded dragon's name?
Luna.
I like Pancake. Except Pancake sounds like something bad's happened to her. I don't know. Is she flat?
Yes.
She's kind of flat.
I should bring her up. You know what? I'll do a commercial.
Bring it back. And you bring Pancake out so the world can meet Pancake. Dylan Tweeney is also here from Valamail. It's great to see you, Dylan. Is this your office? Where are we here? This is my office. Good bookshelf. Yeah, man.
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to flex or anything. Like, you know, Zoom call experts around the world. But yes, those are my books. This is like a little garden office in the back of my garage. So
I like it. I do want to point out that our very own Jeff Jarvis got, I think, the first ever 10 out of 10 on Rate My Skype Room. And and I think honestly, it was because of the bookshelves. They're always a good choice. Always a good choice.
I feel that the books make me look smarter. So that's why I point the camera in that direction.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff's an actual professor, so as is Amy Webb. I'm trying to find the post here. I'll find it. Amy Webb has a few books, including her own. She's got three great books. I can see the signals are talking. I recognize that. And right in front of it, The Big Nine. That's her latest book. And you're writing a new one. I'm excited about your new one. I can't wait to
read it. I am, actually. It's all about synthetic biology, and I have a thought on how to apply synthetic biology to some of the current social issues we're having, but it is not fully formed yet. But the book is getting written.
Could we replace ourselves with synthetic people? That might be the solution.
Well, there's synthetic media, which is, if you're concerned about deepfakes, I don't know how dark we want to get, but I can keep you up for many nights talking about
Oh, great.
And the first synthetic marketplace that just launched.
Fantastic. Synthetic marketplace?
Yeah. So how's this? You can license yourself out. You can license your voice, your body, your face, your gestures out for other people to then use and sort of create synthetic versions of you to use ostensibly in product demos or in games or possibly commercials, but it's hard to, from a technological point of view, you can't really prevent those synths from doing other things.
Yeah, right. So expect some Matthew McConaughey porn soon.
Expect the best. Expect the absolute worst.
I would actually gladly rent my likeness out for any purpose at all, but nobody wants it. So,
can I put a plug in for since we're paused?
Please.
I put a plug in for Wesley. I met him at South by last year and was so damn impressed his really great understanding of tech and of what it's like to be inside of an organization that is trying to go through a change. And anybody would be smart anywhere in the greater Austin area to scoop him up. He won't be looking for work for long. I'm sure he's pretty amazing.
He's fantastic. I agree with you 100%. 100%. Here's Jeff Jarvis's 10 out of 10 Skype room. I think what really did it was these little chairs here and here. Yeah. And of course, bookshelves. Our show today brought to you by our friends at Extra Hop. Let me talk a little bit about what Extra Hop does. As you probably have gathered, the new IT reality is remote access on a massive scale, right? Rapid cloud, multi-cloud adoption, a steady increase in Internet of Things devices, and add onto that a nice layer of cybercrime. and you're baking a cake full of trouble. It's more important than ever that organizations can see everything going on in their environment. And I don't just mean, you know, your LAN. I'm talking about from the cloud to the data center, all the way to the customer. In order to protect and scale your business, you need more than unified visibility. You need context for what you're seeing, for detections. And you need intelligence response workflows so teams can easily collaborate, act fast on that information they're getting. I am talking about the most amazing platform. It's called ExtraHop. ExtraHop helps you detect threats and performance issues 95% faster and respond 60% more efficiently. And if you don't believe me, just check out the dashboard demo. If you go to extrahop.com/twit, it's kind of mind-boggling. It's eye-opening. ExtraHop helps you keep your business secure, helps you keep it available with SaaS-based cloud-native network detection and response. And you'll see on the website, you'll see testimonials. Wizards of the Coast uses ExtraHop. They secure and support their AWS cloud with ExtraHop. Chief Architect and Information Security Officer at Wizards of the Coast, Dan McDaniel, I got the quote, said, "There's no other company that aligns to supporting the DevOps model, the speed, the lack of friction, than ExtraHop." Ulta Beauty, you know Ulta Beauty, they use ExtraHop to secure their Google Cloud and to keep networking and security teams closely aligned. That means the engineers have more time to focus on innovation. John Kreese, who's the senior IT engineer at Ulta Beauty, said, "Before ExtraHop, we had limited visibility into what was going on in our cloud, but now we can quickly identify vulnerabilities and exploits and understand how our applications are performing up there in the sky." Take control of your cloud security, of your performance with ExtraHop. Just the information you need presented in an amazingly useful way. It really is great. You can go to extrahop.com/twit, see a live product demo, but you'll also find a lot of information there, tips on securing and supporting remote access. A lot of companies doing that now. And it's really, this is something you need. extrahop.com/twit. extrahop.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Tech. I don't want people to think I'm slamming Ben, because I think Ben Thompson's brilliant. His Stratechery is an amazing website. We try to get him on the show as often as possible because he's in Taiwan. The hour of this show is very difficult for him. And Monday morning is, he brings the kids to school and stuff. But do read his post from last Tuesday. I don't think this is premium. It might be. I'm a member. No, I guess not, because I'm not signed in. Dust in the Light. This is really a fascinating look at the Crescent in Madison, Wisconsin. He's referring, of course, the Dust in the Light was Magic Johnson's term, right, about how racism is
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
It was Jabbar, okay. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, how racism is the dust that you don't see, that it's all around us until you shine a light on it, and then you can see it. And he's talking about the kind of inbuilt racism for Black and Hispanic neighborhoods in Madison, Wisconsin. And as a result, Ben's a big data guy. As a result, education, poverty, crime, and on and on and on. And he's casting a little light on the dust in there. Really, really good stuff. Highly recommend it, stratechery.com. I just want to give Ben a plug. We'll get him back on. We'll make him wake up a little early. Some other big changes. Alexis Ohanian, the creator of Reddit, resigning from the board at Reddit. And he has asked that he to be replaced by a Black board member. Reddit has said, yes, we will do that. He's also using future gains on the company's stock to make a difference in the world, to serve the Black community. He's tweeted that he's pledging $1 million to Colin Kaepernick's Your Rights camp. It's kind of sad. After Kaepernick got so much heat and basically hounded out of the NFL, that Roger Goodell just
that was nuts. That whole video, that whole thing was just that. Talk about. So I would actually, can we just pause? Because I would actually love to hear Dylan's thoughts on that. If you like the corporate backtrack on that.
Yeah, because that's a because it's a corporate messaging issue, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. And of course,
slash also personal
Kaepernick
ethics.
Kneeling on the field. I mean, talk about a elegant, beautiful protest to protest racism and police bad policing, racist policing, ended up costing him his job and his career. Ironically, here we are with a police officer kneeling on a black man and killing him. And now protesters, I think, and it's really quite beautiful to see it, kneeling. And police sometimes on kneeling with them in support. Go ahead, Dylan.
Yeah, Roger Goodell, he just saw the winds of change blowing. And he's like, crap, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say it like that. Holy cow, we better get on the right side of public opinion here.
It's kind of not credible. Honestly,
it does not seem credible. Now he may be limited by legal restrictions because there was some kind of agreement with Kaepernick, and I don't know what the details are of that. They're probably secret, and so he may actually have his hands somewhat tied in terms of what he can say.
But, were wrong. The NFL was wrong in how they handled the players kneeling.
I'm not going to play the
video. But
look, Kaepernick actually talked to police before he started kneeling and people in the military to say, what would be a respectful way for me to show, you know, that I protest this? And he got people, actual veterans, to say, you know, if you take a knee during the anthem, it'll show that you're still being respectful to the anthem, but just that you object. And then, like, once it started getting popular, then people blew up. He really got badly mistreated,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah. By the way, we now see Pancake in all her glory.
Did she respond to her name? Does she know her name?
Oh, my God.
No, she doesn't care.
Not yet. I bet she responds to pancakes.
She does look flat.
Yeah, she's had a lot of babies. That's why.
She's quite beautiful. I love the skin. Her the pattern on her back is beautiful.
Yeah.
That's nice.
She's a sweet girl.
So I'm sorry that you lost. I'm really sorry that you lost Luna. That's terrible. But
yeah, that was hard on everybody.
Yeah.
It was a tragic accident.
It was an accident. Oh, I don't want to know.
Yeah.
Don't tell me.
Yeah. Can I say two things really quickly? We can get back to the story.
No, do whatever you want. Say whatever you want.
What Amy said about me was extremely touching, and I Aww. Really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
I really loved meeting you. You just totally impressed the hell out of me. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I won't say where you were working at the time, but I went back and then talked to people that I knew at that place about you and how impressed I was. So, yeah.
Oh, thank you. Wow. Thank you so much. I mean, it means a lot to me, especially while I'm looking for work, it's extremely, extremely hard, not just finding a job, but just even being mentally available and present in order to just do interviews. It's extremely, extremely hard. The second thing I wanted to say really quickly is that, I'm just going to read this. Minneapolis City Council announces intent to dismantle police department.
Wow.
Our commitment is to end our city's toxic relationship with the Minneapolis Police Department, City Council President Lisa Bender said on Sunday. A veto-proof majority of Minneapolis City's Council members announced during a rally at Ponderhorn Sunday that they're planning to dismantle the police department.
Holy.
So then what happened?
Wow.
Cow.
What does that mean?
I don't know. We'll see, I guess.
It's called defunding the police.
Yeah, that's it.
Honestly, it's so clear the systemic racism, the mess that is the Minneapolis Police Department, needs a pretty dramatic cure. And
when the head of the police, association says, I've been involved in several officer-involved shootings and it hasn't bothered me.
Yeah. No, the union leader is horrific.
Union leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's horrific.
I got to say, Minneapolis is a pretty cool city. It's awful. It's
sad.
Bad. That's bad.
It's really sad. But, you know, I look at Madison, Wisconsin, too. both considered bastions of conscious liberalism, of of people who really care, progressivism even, and yet you see the systemic racism integrated, woven into the fabric of these communities, and it just reminds you it's everywhere. And the thing is, it's so woven in. It is the dust in the air, and it's time to clear that out. They rebooted. That's dramatic.
Rebooting is sometimes the only one.
That is dramatic.
Holy smokes.
I don't know. Wow. Yeah, it's hard to imagine what this means. Wow.
I think what it means is that every other police... this is one way to... you don't want to be in a situation where you are forced to confront your cherished beliefs and you're going to be on the losing side. So if I was every other police department in the country, I would confront the cherished beliefs right now and figure out how to make changes and then make good on those changes publicly.
Minneapolis City Council President Lisa Bender said, "Our efforts at incremental reform have failed, period." Minneapolis Public Schools stopped using police. University of Minnesota stopped using MPD. Minneapolis Parks and Rec no longer using MPD for security. So there is really a lack of faith and belief in the integrity of the Minneapolis Police Department. That is just wild. Wow. That's what I mean by, I think, the voice of the people is starting to be heard. And that's why it's important to stand up and speak and to protest and to get out in the streets and to let people know you have to speak up. You can't just sit in silence and say, yeah, I agree with that. You got to speak up. You got to do something. Wow.
Back to our scheduled programming. Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's a huge, huge
the things you learn on
story.
On Twit. Oh my God. Well, that's worth
it's
interrupting.
So this is an opportunity to think about next order implications. So this is, again, another quick inflection point. So again, everybody now can stop and think through many different alternative futures, because what we are habituated to doing is to take signals from the present and extrapolate them out into the future, which would mean what we just need to do next is fire all these police officers and have a brand new new police department with all different people, which may not solve the problem. So you'd have to work fast, but there's an opportunity here to get creative and think about many different plausible future states, and there's a huge catastrophe. I always say this: catastrophe can sometimes be a catalyst for great change. And I think now is that time. I'd be very curious to see how they're thinking through the next order impacts.
Wow. It seems trivial compared to this, but I'm going to mention Zoom has said that we will have end-to-end encryption, but not for the free tier, because then this was kind of a tone-deaf statement from the CEO, Eric Yuan, the CEO of Zoom. We don't want to give free users encryption because we also want to work together with the FBI and local law enforcement in case some people use Zoom for a bad purpose. Of course, paid customers would never use Zoom for a bad purpose. Only those cheapskates using the free tier.
I love that we live in a time when headline editors on CNET can what was the headline? It was like Zoom will not offer free encryption because they want to help the cops.
Yeah, there you go. It helps. There you go. Zoom won't end ending. So Alex Stamos, who of course is the former security guy at Yahoo and Facebook, who was hired as a consultant by Zoom, said, this makes sense. He said, will this eliminate all abuse? No, but since the vast majority of harm comes from self-service users with fake identities, this will create friction and reduce harm.
But the police are going to come after some idiot Zoom bomber? That doesn't make any sense.
I think their concern is people using free accounts to, coordinate terrorist cells or trade child porn.
But the good news is you can only do that for 40 minutes at a time. So It's I guess the idea is if you pay for an account, we have your information. I think that that kind of minimizes how easy it is to anonymize this stuff. But okay.
Well, meantime, Mozilla is working on a new video conferencing platform that's totally decentralized, called MeThing, I think. I haven't tried it yet.
We use Jitsi, or I try. Actually, we don't. I have a Jitsi server. I set up Jitsi. It's running. It even has a cute URL, twit.team. I can't get anybody here to use it. We keep using Zoom for some reason and Google Meet. But
they want to make sure that they're, it can be seen by the police.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I don't know. Yeah, because we run our own server, it's end-to-end encrypted, and the only decryption happens at server side, which is local and not. So it is end-to-end encrypted. I don't know. You know, people use what's easiest.
But I think a company who's been like lambasted for security is intentionally choosing not to encrypt. That sounds
weird.
Sounds like a bad business decision.
And I have to say, you know, it looked a little bit like showboating when Zoom went out and they hired Stamos and they hired Katie Mazouras' company and they bought Keybase. They went out and they have a lot of money. They've been doing very well. They spent a lot of money in all the trappings of security. But this just shows you when you buy somebody like Alex Stamos as a consultant, what's he going to do? Say, yeah, that was a bad idea. I quit. That's why it's the trappings of security as opposed to maybe. Now, they put out a white paper. Steve Gibson, our security guy, went through it a couple of weeks ago. He said Zoom's doing, you know, looks like what Zoom's doing for end-to-end encryption is really good. But, of course, if they don't turn it on for everybody, I don't know. I don't know how useful it is. I guess that's a reasonable thing to say is we don't want bad actors just to use free accounts.
They didn't really say, but and we don't really have access to this data as far as I know, but it's possible that they are seeing substantial questionable or criminal activity utilizing free accounts, and they want to make sure doesn't go underground.
They may know more. That's a good point.
I can't imagine, like, what is the mafia having a Zoom meeting because they can't get together because of COVID and they're all, you know, doing their mafia stuff with the gallery view? It makes no sense.
Okay, that has to be a Saturday Night Live segment. Okay.
Well, I just like, just you saying. Know, like, you know, one of them is like too old and kind of, like doesn't quite understand how to connect things. And, you know, like, what the hell
You're
is
on
going
mute.
On?
You're on mute. Forget about it.
I can't hear you. Oh, my God.
Who's doing what the hell is happening in 40 minutes on Zoom that would have required this like totally tone deaf public service announcement?
All right. I have a theory. I'm going to pass this by you. Cause my theory is, he's terrified of the FBI and he's terrified of, Attorney General Barr, and he doesn't want anybody in federal law enforcement to say, and by the way, we got to end encryption for Zoom. So this is a bone. He's throwing him a bone. He even put it in the headline because he doesn't want William Barr to say, along with we got to stop encryption on Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp and we got to stop encryption here and there. He doesn't want him to add that Zoom to that list, right? I think that's...
I will pay real money to watch... I would love to see Barr organize himself, get onto a Zoom, and make it work. That'll be my contribution. I would pay somebody some money if that happened.
Now, don't be ageist. Just because, you know, he's an old guy.
I'm a pragmatist. Have you heard the...
Yeah, no, you're right.
I'm having problems tonight. I'm orange, and I've gone through three different microphones.
But it's working. But it's working. We got it working. That's the key. That's the beauty of it.
But I mean, it's like, you know.
Let's take a little break. That's Amy Webb. We've got Wesley Faulkner with us. We've got Dylan Tweeny. It's great to have all three of you. This is a great panel, and it couldn't be a better time to have all three of you here. What we want to do before I do the ad, we have a promo, right? Let's take a look at what happened. We decided it would be a bad idea to do our usual Twit After Hours on Friday. It's just too difficult a time. But we still had some pretty good shows this week, and I think you'll agree when you watch this.
Previously on Twit.
I thought you were going to celebrate, Jeff Jarvis, the virtual Chipotle, Karsten said.
Chipotle, wash your mouth out. Thanks to Karsten. See that bottle of official Taco Bell hot sauce?
Oh.
I'll think of you every time I burp.
Mac Break Weekly.
If you're going to loot an Apple store, you might think twice. None of that stuff is going to be usable. It says, please return to Apple Walnut Street. This device has been disabled and is being tracked.
Tech News Weekly.
Many people are, obviously, they're taking to the streets. They're making their voices heard right now. It's important to be sure that they can do this safely.
Now, one of the key missions for Electronic Frontier Foundation is making sure that people have, you know, the freedom to assemble and to share their voice with folks without concern about government repression or warrantless surveillance. So it's important to make sure that we're also providing resources where legal protections are not sufficient.
Smart Tech Today.
Matthew, the king of shortcuts, Casanelli, has a shortcut for iOS. Should you be pulled over by police officers or are in a situation where you feel unsafe and want to record the situation?
Since this actually went viral, I think like 5,000 people have downloaded the shortcut so far, or one of the versions I made, at least makes me feel better that maybe some people who are out there protesting were able to stay in contact with their family.
Twit.tv. Tell your friends.
That's awesome. And we should remember, this is the less quoted part of the First Amendment, but the right of people to peacefully assemble to protest is protected speech, according to the First Amendment. It's right in there. It's written right in there. Our show today brought to you by Barracuda. That's a name everybody who knows security and technology and the internet knows Barracuda, the provider of cloud-enabled enterprise-grade security solutions to protect you in email, in networks, in data, in applications. Barracuda is the best. I mean, just the best in the business. And they have an email solution that's really important these days with your employees going home, working from home, getting email. It wakes me up at night because I think about my employees. They're at home. There's, you know, here in the studio, when email comes in, we protect them. But now they're at home and the email's coming in. Did you know that 91% of all cyber attacks start in an email? Spear phishing, ransomware, account takeover, conversation hijacking. You've got dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of employees working remotely, each of them getting tons of email every day. Any one of those emails can put you out of business. One click on the wrong email, it costs you money, costs you customers, costs you your reputation. Barracuda has a great blog, which I highly recommend at the website. You can read about they've been analyzing emails. They do it anyway. This is part of their business. They have been the steady increase in coronavirus-related spear phishing attacks since January. Since the end of February, 667% more spear phishing attacks. Of course, the bad guys use current events to get to you. And you might receive, for instance, an email from somebody impersonating the World Health Organization saying, open these tips for staying safe. It can come from anybody. And that's why you need Barracuda Total Email Protection. It includes all-in-one email security for your Microsoft 365 account. You get backup. You get archiving, probably a legal requirement. It is in many businesses. You get AI-based protection. That's important because spear phishing attacks are constantly mutating, changing to take advantage of the times. You need protection that changes faster. They've got AI-based protection from spear phishing, account takeover, business email compromise. You get an automated incident response that gives you options to quickly and efficiently address attacks. As you probably know, when an attack happens, the speed with which you respond to it is directly related to how easy it is to fix the problem. Take your time. You're going to have a much bigger problem. Barracuda Total Email Protection helps you get it done fast. They even have security awareness training that'll help you educate your workforce so employees can be the first line of defense against attacks. Barracuda. Right now, there are new attacks out there taking advantage of the situation we're going through right now. I guarantee you there's spear phishing email that says Black Lives Matter. I guarantee you And you got to stop that before it gets. This is my nightmare. Employee gets a spear phishing attack. They open it up. Maybe it's an email from me saying, I need you to look at this, review this spreadsheet today. They open it up. Nothing happens. It sits there quietly in wait on their laptop till they come to work. They join the company network and then it goes, I'm free. And it spreads throughout the network. That's my nightmare. That's why you need total email protection from Barracuda. Ensure the safety and security of your business with Barracuda. Uncover the threats hiding in your inbox. Get a free, I like this. You can get this for free. Secure email threat scan of your Office 365 account. It's risk-free. Just go to barracuda.com/twit. Barracuda.com/twit. Barracuda. You need, now more than ever, you need Barracuda. Your journey secured. We thank them for their support of our show. And actually, tying right into this, Exim, which is a kind of a widely used, I don't know if it's the most used mail transfer agent, but it is fairly widely used by a lot of mail servers and a lot of individuals at home. It has a well-known bug. It comes pre-installed in some Linux distros, so you may not even know it. CVE-2019-10149 allows a remote attacker to execute commands and code of their choosing, and apparently it's actively being exploited right now by the GRU, the Russian General Staff Main Intelligence Directorate's Main Center for Special Technologies. Russian spies and hackers have been using this to add privileged users, disable network security settings, execute additional scripts for network exploitation, and they're going after both the Biden campaign and the Trump campaign. Everybody is vulnerable. Advanced persistent threat phishing emails. Google's tag researchers are warning that APTs are targeting staffers for both the Trump and the Biden campaign. Shane Huntley with Google's threat analysis group said on Twitter on Thursday, two separate phishing campaigns recently detected, one from China, another from Iran.
Attacks from Iran are on the rise. In the very recent,
they've
few
got
weeks.
Good hackers. Yeah. They have in the past.
Good hackers, bad name though. Every time when I think of the GRU, I think of GRU. From yeah. All right. I can hear is like
GRU.
I like think of a bunch of minions smoking away and Steve Carell's funny voice.
I think one thing that we need as a society, or like as a company or organization, is a way to like be notified and be able to put these patches in quickly.
Yeah.
This is a really bad bug. I mean, it allows you to just take root control and
right.
push any mm-hmm. software you want. It was fixed last year, but now it's being used.
Yeah, it's CVE 2019. It's from last year.
Yeah, and so it's just people are like, oh, I didn't know. Like, do I have to be on their email list? There's not an easy way to maintaining all of these systems.
Yeah, and these are dusty systems in the closet. They've been running for years, right? Mailing lists and stuff and.
Yeah. Or in your ISP's closet.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. right. That's right.
That is terrifying. Oh my God! Can you imagine that kind of a deployment? That's terrible. That's more. That's the scariest.
Yeah.
To me.
No.
Thanks, Dylan.
Got you. Sorry.
Yeah, you just terrified us, Dylan. Nice job. Well, you work with mail, right? Valimail is about authentication, but you probably are very aware of all the threats that come in.
Yeah, yeah. We've actually seen a spike in coronavirus-related phishing in the last couple of months as well. There's a lot. What we focus on in particular is sender identity.
Right.
So we see a lot of impersonations, bogus domains like cdc.agency, which is not really a thing.
Right.
Or the WHO is now protected with this technology called DMARC, but for a long time it was very easy to just send email from who.int, which is actually their domain because there was no DMARC protection. So we see a lot of that. And haven't actually looked or noticed any Black Lives Matter related phishing. But because of the way our network works, it might take a little while before we see that kind of thing.
Yeah, I'm speculating. I haven't seen any, but yeah. It's hackers have no They have no compunction. They have. They just. They'll do whatever they. Whatever works, right?
They'll jump right on whatever works. That's
actually,
exactly right.
I want you to tell me if this is true or not. I read this the other day. I wish I could remember the source. You know, all those Nigerian prince, you know, phishing scams that you see, the scam emails, they're almost always detectable because the English is bad or the spelling is bad. I just read that that's actually intentional.
Yes.
Because they're English speakers. They don't.
Yes.
It's not that they don't understand the language. They're just much more interested in people too stupid to notice because they're much easier marks.
You know, that might be it. It might also have to do with getting through spam algorithms.
Sure, you misspell
the kind of algorithm.
Viagra.
You misspell something and then it can't get
right.
caught. Yeah, that's exactly
it doesn't
right.
look like it's that concerted, though. They're not trying to hide certain terms. It makes perfect sense to me that they don't want somebody who's smart enough to say, well, that's ungrammatical. That must be wrong. They want somebody who goes,
really
a Nigerian prince left me money? Oh, hooey.
I love that theory, but I would be cautious of like putting too much stock in it because I think that smart people click on phishing email too, Leo. I'm sorry to say.
What? What? I did. You know where I almost have gotten bit twice is not email, but in text messages. Mm-hmm. I got one because my son lost his iPhone and about 3 weeks later, it wasn't. Probably was just coincidental. I got an email from a text from Apple saying, we think we found your lost iPhone. Click this link. Except I looked and it wasn't apple.com. It was some bizarre link. And I almost clicked on it. Now, who knows if that would have been sufficient? Although there are plenty of exploits out there that somebody called the radio show today. I thought this was interesting. Sure, he'd been hacked because his wife wanted Facebook Messenger on her Kindle Fire tablet. And instead of going to the Kindle store to get Messenger, he Googled it and clicked a link. And then all of a sudden, all sorts of weird things were happening. And I thought, well, first of all, he didn't install anything on the Kindle Fire, and probably that wouldn't do it. But then I realized that could very well have been an exploit aimed at his router. And that's a big problem, too, because routers never get patched. They're in service for years. There are many.
Nobody knows how to configure them.
Nobody
knows. Average people don't know.
Right. And there are many widely distributed router hacks. Remember when the FBI 2 years ago said, everybody turn off your router and then turn it back on again? Reboot your router. Remember that? So after talking to the guy for a little while, I said, yeah, actually, technically, I guess you could have been. Could have been a router drive-by. The other one that I almost clicked on was when I got something from, looked like Twitter, but it actually was Twitter. It was T-V-V-I-T-T-E-R.
That's awesome.
Log into Twitter. That's called, what is that called? Domain spoofing? Domain? There's a
name. That's lookalike domain. That's a lookalike domain.
Lookalikes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I now have, I use NextDNS.io to filter. It's kind of like a pie hole in the cloud. And that's one of the things it looks out for is close but not exactly the same.
It gets tricky, too, because sometimes you can put Unicode characters into domains now.
Right.
So you could have like that little Turkish I that doesn't have a dot, or there's different kinds of A's that look exactly like the A and there's no visual difference.
Right.
Yeah. How do you tell?
Right.
Cyrillic letters and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I lived in Hong Kong when the huge debate for the TDLs was raging over whether or not to allow non-English letters in the domains. And so, like, they were going to allow Chinese characters for the first time ever, but it was like this huge fight and huge security threat and all of these things. And, like, here we are 20 years later, and Leo's on Twitter.
Twitter. I love the Twitter. It's wonderful. I love it.
One thing that's going to happen, I feel like, is for corporate employees falling for domains that they aren't looking for. For instance, there's a lot of, hey, take this corporate training, and it's not on your company's domain. It's on some other company. But it's legit. But how do you know? Because you're not sure.
Right.
There's a lot of that going on, especially it's like, hey, take this unconscious bias training or watch this video. There's a lot of directives coming from domains that aren't in the company you belong to that people who are in the company think, well, it sounds official, and it's hard to tell whether or not it is or not.
Yeah.
Isn't there some kind of like, is this spoofed? You know what I mean? Like, wasn't there a website where you could put a URL in and see if it was spoofed?
Oh, that would be good.
Well, I'm just saying these, they don't need to be spoofed. It could
be
called
a real site.
CorporateTraining.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you can register and then send it to all the employees and saying you have to do this corporate training.
I get that all the time because I still work for somebody. I work for iHeart Media. My radio show is syndicated by Premier, and we get a lot of trainings. I have a training I'm supposed to take. I can't get in. They have a lot of security on the getting in part, and then the training's in Flash. But
you have real players.
What I love,
too?
Yeah, practically. But then the training is something like how to meet with people safely. I think it's going to be like a COVID.
Flash is a good intermediary for that.
Yeah. Use Flash. That's safe. Every time I have to take these trainings, I have to call the IT department and say, okay, I need my Okta reset and my password. Because they're one of those companies, it drives me crazy, that rotates its passwords every 3 months. Like that's going to make things more secure, making Leo have to call you because I haven't used my password in 3 months. It's just nuts. And then they use Flash. I have to install Flash. I tell you. Italian public prosecutor says Project Gutenberg is piracy. Apparently, I didn't know this, but in Italy, the Italian communications watchdog, I guess their FCC, the AGCOM, set up new administrative copyright enforcement powers that allows them to just declare sites are infringing, at which point all the ISPs in Italy are required to block the site. That's it. No repeal, no trial, nothing. And
does Italy not have other things to be worrying about at this particular moment? I mean, the mafia right now is zooming.
Yeah, they're zooming. They're zooming. Hey, it would be nice it would be a terrible thing. So apparently there was a post somewhere that listed a bunch of sites for piracy and Project Gutenberg, which, as we all know, is not a pirate site, but in fact a wonderful, useful tool full of public domain textbooks. It's really great. They were monitoring a Telegram private channel with links to pirate sites. They blocked them all, including Project Gutenberg. So anyway, if you can't get to Project Gutenberg in Italy, I don't know who you call. Who are you going to call?
ExpressVPN.
There you go. That's what VPNs were made for. You nailed it. Perfect. Perfect answer.
I think it's funny that even the pirates are padding their libraries of free content.
We need more. HBO Max, perfect example of net neutrality and why you need it. AT&T, which owns HBO Max, has announced that you can watch all you want on the AT&T wireless network because it's not going to hit your data caps.
If you can figure out how to find it,
yeah, good luck getting it.
You're actually eligible to sign on.
Netflix will, Disney Plus will, everybody else will, but not the ones we own. Turns out, and thank you, Neil I. Patel, for focusing on this on The Verge. Turns out AT&T has a way for anybody to get, you know, they call it sponsored data. You pay. And your service will no longer count against data caps to AT&T's mobile users. And it's actually AT&T's done it three times. All three services were owned by AT&T. So I continually get people saying, see, we didn't need net neutrality. Nothing bad's happened. So anytime anything.
Put the word sponsored in front of anything.
Right. That's a bad start. So anyway, good news. If you could figure out how to get HBO Max, it won't go against your data caps. But the point being, in case I need to explain it, I don't think I do to you guys are smart. Anybody who listens to this show knows a little bit about net neutrality. This is AT&T putting its thumb on the scale in favor of its own services over competing services. That's why you need net neutrality.
But HBO Max needs all the help they can get, frankly.
In this case, all right, go ahead. Has anybody here subscribed to it? Probably we all have free subscriptions. We just don't know. Because there's lots of ways to get it for free, but...
Not until you give me your password.
Oh, okay. I'll be glad to. No, I haven't paid for it yet. I haven't yet become...
If you're a Comcast subscriber and you... It's like the world's worst decision tree. So,
it's
like,
terrible.
If you're Comcast and you have HBO, then yes, you can if you've already got the service.
Which I am, but I still can't figure out how to get it for free. So there.
Then you can't get it on your Roku.
Yeah, or it's not on Amazon or Roku. It's only on Apple TV and your
No, in fact, it does not work on Amazon for a reason. So that's
another anti-competitive measure.
Yeah.
Or is it Amazon anti-competitive against HBO or HBO anti-competitive against Amazon?
So there's a whole fight amongst the OTAs and the OTTs around who – and the contracts tend to be pretty long. So like if one of the big networks signs on with Hulu, that's usually – that's like a five-year contract. And so the problem is that the way contracts work in the entertainment industry, are very similar to how regulation works. You know, when technology comes, technology moves much faster than regulation or contractual agreements. And so, you know, they're kind of stuck.
I know, because when I worked at Tech TV, of course, the first thing you want to do is put your stuff on the internet. But in order to get on cable companies, you had to promise, whatever we do, we'll never put our stuff on the internet. What a tattered web we weave when we practice to sign contracts. Amy Webb, thank you so much for being here. You're just great. This is Amy Webb night mode. It's that we've blocked all the blue light because Amy shines
I put
so
my
bright.
Hair up and yeah. I'm in night mode
It's night mode. AmyWebb.io, the Future Today Institute. Is that .com?
It's .com, the real one, and I guess .vvxi.
I like that one. I registered at one point. My real name is has a acute accent over the E, Leo, because my parents, I don't know what they were thinking. Anyway, just to make it hard. So I registered leo.is. Leo is. The problem is nothing renders it. So when you look at it, it's some bizarre Unicode. It's useless. I thought, oh, this would be great because I can't get Leo because Leo's long gone. So I thought, oh, this will be great. I could be Leo and everybody will be able to see it, except I can actually show you what it renders out as because I have it on my Fastmail domains. It is xn-lo-bja.is. Not so useful.
That's puny code. That's how you render Unicode using the alphabet.
Is that true? They call it puny code?
They call it puny code.
P-U-N-Y or like something else? Like puny, like small?
I'm not sure if it's a Y or an I, but yeah.
I don't get how that renders to Leo.
I don't really know how to translate puny code myself.
And
I
don't know if I type this into a browser, I don't think that actually goes anywhere. But anyway.
So Dylan, wait a minute. We've just solved a giant mystery. Dylan, what is Elon Musk's new child's name?
It's puny code.
That's what it is. We figured it out.
It's puny code.
Puny code translator. It really is Leo.
Yes, that's it. They named their child after me. There is, if you go to punycoder.com, a puny code converter. We really should enter in.
Put in your XN code from your domain.
Oh, I'm sure it will do it. what was it again? XN-LO- Oh, I don't remember it. Anyway, who cares? That's Dylan Tweeney. He is the VP Communications for Valimail, V-A-L-I. No, that's not him. The other guy. Valimail.com, right?
Yes, correct.
What do you do? Give yourself a plug. What is Valimail?
Valimail authenticates the identity of email senders using DMARC, SPF, and DKIM for standards-based stuff. And then for inbound email, we prevent unknown senders like lookalike domains and cousin domains
nice.
From getting into corporate inboxes.
Very important. Actually, I use Fastmail, which does DKIM, SPF, and DMARC. That's why Fastmail is xn-lo-png.is. Maybe I should have gone to Valimail instead.
This rolls right off the tongue. Yes.
Thank you for being here, Dylan.
If I can plug something about
yes.
that website since
yes.
you put that.
Yes.
There is a domain checker there. If you ever want to know whether an email that you're getting could potentially be sent by somebody pretending to be that domain, you can enter a domain into the domain checker on our homepage at valimail.com, and it'll tell you if it's protected by DMARC or not. If it's protected, it should be much harder to be spoofed. If it's not protected, then it could easily be somebody could easily pretend to be that domain in an email that they send to you.
Yeah, for years I've signed my emails with PGP. Like, that's going to do anything. So maybe I should
probably look more nerdy.
It makes me, yeah, there's this big, long block at the end. And I say, if you want to validate the email came from me, just run it through GPG and it should tell you. We need Valimail. Clearly, we need Valimail. Thank you, Dylan. It's great to have you.
Thank you.
Wesley Faulkner and Pancake.
Yes, I put Pancake up.
I love Pancake. Why, though, out of curiosity, would you prefer that to, say, a kitty cat?
Oh, we have a menagerie.
We have
cats, we have dogs, we have chickens, we have fish, we have...
Oh, you don't feed the chickens to the dragon, do you?
No, okay, no, good. We try to keep them separate.
Okay, good.
we have everything. We have,
nice.
As you can tell from the setup here, we homeschool our kids, we try to provide a rich environment for them to learn.
Are those Montessori works behind you, that kind of thing? They kind of look like that.
Yes. There's a different style that we use for depending on the lesson, but a lot of it is experiential. And so the learning is a thing that is part of our life and not just restricted to certain hours of the day.
That's really awesome. And I know as a result, your kids will be superlative achievers in the world and the people we need most. So thank you for doing that. But
well, part of that reason that we do that is because of racism. And so it's pervasive. And one thing I did want to say is that if you in some time during this pandemic tweeted or sent a post about COVID-19, but you're not putting something about the racial collision that's going on right now, and because you think it doesn't affect you, then I think you're sadly mistaken.
Yeah.
And same goes because it's Pride Month and for LGBTQIA rights and everything, that this is the time to speak up and say that you want to be on the right side of history.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're all humans. And we got to start treating each other like brothers and sisters, because we are. And we all came from Africa, right? Unless we came from Mars. Or maybe we came from Mars and then came from Africa. Like, was on the
all
way.
All depends on how far back you want to go.
That's right.
You know, it doesn't matter where we came from.
It's where we are.
We're all here. We're all here now.
We're all on this little blue marble.
We all got to take care of each other. Make it through together. That's right.
God bless you. Yeah. And I don't know if you saw the videos of people roaming the Vegas casinos, but I don't think that's going to really be a good plan in the long run for keeping the planet intact.
One last thing I want to plug.
Yes.
This Tuesday, I am going to speaking at a meetup. It's in Berlin, but you can attend it virtually. I have, if you go to my Twitter account, Wesley83, and it's pinned. I'm requesting that as many people sign up for that as possible. I'll be speaking about my experience with neurodiversity. And so there will be other speakers talking about that, about their experience in tech and how companies can better adjust to their neurodivergent employee base.
That's awesome.
I'll be talking about my personal experience. So I hope people attend that.
That is so cool. It's an Ally meetup. Why do they spell ally with ones instead of L's?
It's similar to, are you familiar with Kubernetes?
Yeah.
And they call it K8s.
Yeah.
So the 8 is the letters in between the K and the S, and that's why they call it K8s. Kubernetes. So ally is accessibility, and so it's A and then 11 letters between that before you hit the Y.
So you're an accessibility ally. I love it.
Yeah.
And there'll be representatives there talking about living with Asperger's, all kinds of neurodiversity. Are you neurodiverse, or you have a neurodiverse child, or?
I have dyslexia, and I also have ADHD.
Well, welcome to the club, dude. this is the ADHD corner over here. No kidding. And not a few dyslexics working at Twit. So, it's nice to if you sign, everybody sign up because you can attend this. Are you using Zoom?
I believe it is using Zoom, but it's free. We want the information to be public. So unencrypted, who cares?
Just nice. Read it. That's right. Yeah. Unencrypted. This is fantastic. Ian McDonald will be there. This is great. I think this is wonderful. Really cool. Thank you, Wesley. I really appreciate it. And everybody, is the best thing to do to go to meetup.com or your website probably, right?
I have the direct meetup link right on my Twitter account. My Twitter account. So you can do a search for the Berlin Ally Meetup and you can find it there on meetup.com.
Twitter.com/Wesley83. Is that your weight or your birth date?
I don't disclose that.
Okay. It adds up to 11, I notice. Just saying. It's great to have you on. Great to have all three of you on. What a great conversation. It's really, for me, these get-togethers are the most important part of my week because I get to talk to smart people, sensitive people, intelligent people, people who care about this very difficult world we're living in. And so I'm very grateful to have all three of you here. It made me feel better. And you can find me at xbj-lo_bn on the internet. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 2:30 Pacific. That's 5:30 Eastern. That's 21:30 UTC. You can watch us do it live if you want, twit.tv/live. There's usually stuff beginning and after that we don't put into the main feed. If you're doing that, join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Those are all people watching live. We also have on-demand versions of everything we do at our website, twit.tv. There's audio and video there. It's on YouTube as well. You can ask your Amazon Echo or your Google Assistant to play it, but the best thing to do is find your favorite podcast. They call them podcasts, I understand. The kids call them podcasts. Podcast application. And subscribe to This Week in Tech, and that way you'll get it automatically the minute it's available on a Sunday. If you do listen asynchronously or watch asynchronously, we also have a forum. It's kind of like the chat room, but it's not in real time, so it's easy for everybody to participate. That's at twit.community. I'd love to see you there. Every time a new show goes up from any of the shows on the network, we put a post up there so you can comment there. If you have an opinion, I'm sure a few of you will have some things to say about today's show. Go ahead, vent at twit.community. There it is. Yes, we have night mode. Thank you all for being here. Have a great, safe week. Take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. We'll see you next time. Another
this
Twit.
Is amazing.